From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, Governor Cuomo promotes his economic development plans and fends off questions about the Buffalo Billions Initiative. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on the Pope's visit this week to the U.S. and New York. And a new study shows people exited New York in droves in 2013. But why? Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Governor Cuomo, in an address before the state's business leaders last week, promoted his economic development plans, including the Buffalo Billion Initiative, and he fended off questions on reports that some of the projects are under investigation by U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
Cuomo, who was well-received by business leaders meeting at the Sagamore Resort on Lake George, gave a PowerPoint presentation focusing on his successes in building up the upstate economy, including the Buffalo Billion Project, which has received praise and credit for helping turn around the state's second-largest city.
Buffalo was the most pessimistic community about their economic future 5 years ago. The most pessimistic. Today, Buffalo is the most optimistic, tied with Manhattan for the most optimistic outlook on the economy, if you can believe that. And that is then feeding on itself. The challenge now is to keep it going.
But putting a damper on the rosy picture painted by the governor are reports, including one in the New York Post, that says U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara is investigating the awarding of state contracts to businesses involved in the Buffalo Billion Project, including the massive Solar City factory and other projects, possibly with an eye toward campaign contributions to the governor. Cuomo, speaking with reporters afterward, says he isn't aware of any probe.
I have no idea what
that
story is about.
Nobody from your office has been subpoenaed, or you're not aware of any investigation?
No.
What about Norton Schuyler Management Company, and what about ESD and its subsidiaries in Western New York?
I have no idea.
The governor says he's also unaware of a report in the New York Daily News. It says SUNY Polytechnic College, which is involved in some of the business deals, has also been subpoenaed and has hired a criminal defense attorney. But he says he has total confidence in the leader of the Polytechnic Institute, Elaine Calieros. And the governor warns not to read too much into any investigations.
I was the former attorney general. You can have investigations that does not mean there's any there or anyone did anything wrong.
The state's Republican Party chairman, Ed Cox, who attended the business council meeting and heard Cuomo's speech, says he disagrees with the policy to award the bulk of the $1 billion slated for Buffalo to Elon Musk's Solar City company.
There's a bigger issue about this project to begin with. Why is $750 million of taxpayers' funds going in to build a building and equipping it that's going to produce one product, manufacture one product, yet untested commercially, and the company's owned by a billionaire? That does not make sense for economic development.
As for campaign contributions from developers who receive state funds, Cox says there should be greater disclosure in real time so that everyone can determine if there's a conflict of interest. Cuomo also pitched his $15 minimum wage increase to business leaders, saying it will include sweeteners like tax breaks to offset costs.
Are there state tax cuts for business that can help offset the cost of the minimum wage? Because you could wind up with a win-win here.
One day earlier, the president of the state's business council said her group is working to include some of those offsets in a minimum wage bill that she concedes has a chance of passing in the state legislature in 2016. Governor Cuomo says he can't immediately raise the minimum wage for state workers, though, unless he renegotiates union contracts. In Lake George, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, this week, another wide-ranging conversation with a regular sparring partner on the program, your Capital Connection program, that is, and that's Ken Lovett, the Albany Bureau Chief for the New York Daily News. You went through a whole host of issues, including the most recent investigation into the Buffalo Billions. Ken's part in that involved SUNY Poly and their relationship to that and the head of that organization, Elaine Calieros.
Well, Elaine Calieros is a very powerful man and considered by many people to be totally untouchable because he's brought chips and economy to the upstate region. The governor's office has been very solicitous of Calieros and of SUNY itself. And SUNY has become a big part of the governor's plan for economic revival in upstate New York. So it is not surprising that when they start to let contracts, it would appear that those contracts are politicized to the point that some of the people who have been giving money to the Cuomo campaign start to get what is considered by some to be preferential treatment, in that when the specs are drawn for who can have the contract, it is one or two firms. And the investigator, who is Preet Bharara, of course, a great hero, is looking into the way in all of this was done. There's got to be some knees knocking in the executive part of the government. But what does it portend? Well, it is interesting that the U.S. attorney for Buffalo, where this investigation is taking place, is married to the lieutenant governor of New York, and for some reason steps aside, and we don't know whether that's on his own initiative or whether he even knew about it as Bharara moved in. But we have to remember a couple of things. First of all, U.S. attorneys, very powerful people, are appointed by the president, but almost always on the advice of the senior senator of the same party as the president. In this case, it's Chuck Schumer. And Chuck Schumer has great confidence in Preet Bharara because Preet Bharara used to work for him as one of his top guys. And that's how he comes to this office. Now, one and one makes two. There will be people who think that Schumer has basically laid hands on Bharara and said, yeah, go and do your job and find out the miscreants. And he has certainly done that. A while back, he said the famous words after he sent somebody to jail, there's more coming, basically, stay tuned. And everybody's been staying tuned with one ear to the ground to see what's coming next. It is Bharara who seems to be committed to cleaning up government, since the legislature will never do it themselves. Look, there are good people in the legislature. We know that. But the problem is that they're not good enough to put a stop to this and to pass meaningful ethics laws and meaningful ways of drawing districts. They just sort of sit back. Hey, if you're getting $100,000, they're supposed to be getting about $80,000 each, but then they get these extra things, Lulus and extra leadership titles and all the rest. If you're getting that, it's very hard to go home and tell the husband or the wife, hey, you know what? We're taking much less money because we're going to be ethical, and we're not going to be getting jobs for our sons-in-laws anymore, and we're not going to be using the kind of political influence we've used in the past. They're just not capable. The legislature just not capable of doing that. Even the good ones who have to bear some of the responsibility because they're not holding their leaders' feet to the fire.
All eyes went to New York this week, Alan, as the Pope, on the final leg of his trip to the U.S., made his stop in New York, St. Patrick's Cathedral, even meeting with Governor Cuomo and Mayor de Blasio, coming out with proposals for more homeless shelters, and the governor, of course, recently coming out for $15 minimum wage across the state, prompting you to talk to Ken Lovett about the politics of the Pope coming and, of course, the continuing animus between the governor and the mayor.
Well, let's start with that. The animus between the governor and the mayor is unbelievable. I just have no idea why they keep going at it. From where I'm sitting, it does appear that the governor has been the initiator of this and has been really slapping de Blasio around. And yet, Cuomo gets better marks, public opinion-wise, than de Blasio. Statewide, that's not unfathomable because, as we all know, upstaters don't have much love for mayors of New York City, which is why they almost never go any higher than being mayor. Now, with the Pope coming, that's a huge thing. This is a guy who really is now the conscience of the world. He's saying, save yourselves. There is climate change. There is pollution. We have to do something about it. He is setting a moral tone, which is that we have to help those who cannot help themselves. This is an anathema to many of the people who invited him to the joint session of Congress, the same Republicans who invited Netanyahu. Now they have invited the Pope. But the Pope, I have a feeling, is going to give them what for. He may do it nicely, he may do it gently, but he's going to tell them that they have a responsibility to make sure that their children and their children's children are still here. And if they turn their back on the realities of what's happening with our climate, with our country, they are in a place where they cannot get out of. And I have to say, I have tremendous respect for this man, this Pope.
You spoke to an interesting man, a Professor Dierstein. And coming out of the conversation we had about the Buffalo Billions, it was interesting when he mentioned the history of New York State and how, well, essentially not much changes. And this had to do with the Capitol fire, the wood that was needed to rebuild, and the contract that eventually got let to a friend of the governor's.
Look, first of all, we had something in the state called Tammany Hall. We had it for a long time. Everybody knows about Boris Tweed and his successors and the other people. Look, this is the way the game is played. It's almost as if you get elected and you have a contract so that you can start to feather your own nest. It's disgusting. And it is characteristic of this legislature. I've said it many times that the people in the legislature do have a responsibility. No, don't blame me. It's my leader. Well, you know what? You elected the leader. The leader often says things that the troops can't say or won't say and takes the heat, for doing that. But also, if you really are serious about this, then you have to pick the kind of people who will bring an ethical perspective to the legislature. The fact that they won't do that, the fact that it's always been this way, is hardly a justification for continuing to do it, because I think everybody's really fed up.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency is asking for public input on a plan to dismantle and decontaminate a processing facility that was built to support PCB dredging efforts in the upper Hudson River. While many officials from surrounding communities have called for additional dredging, others would like to see things wrapped up sooner. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard reports.
EPA's Processing Facility Demobilization and Restoration Plan centers around the dewatering facility in Fort Edward in Washington County that processes PCB-contaminated sediment dredged from the Hudson. As GE nears completion of its final season of dredging, the plant and its infrastructure, including concrete slabs, roadways, train tracks, and buildings, are to be decontaminated. The company has resisted calls by many environmentalists and elected officials to continue cleaning up the river beyond the dredging period. Village of Fort Edward Mayor Matthew Traver said he would like to see the facility closed on schedule.
Yeah, our feelings here in Fort Edward, and I can speak for, you know, the village board, that we certainly are looking forward to the decommissioning of that facility so we can look forward to redevelopment of the entire area over there. I know the current landowners are certainly excited and looking forward to trying to go out and market that to bring in some other industries into the area to help, Washington County as well as, you know, Fort Edward.
The mayor's sentiment is echoed by Kingsbury Supervisor Jim Lindsay, chair of the Washington County Board of Supervisors.
It's time to move forward and close it down.
Meanwhile, this summer, a coalition of Hudson River lawmakers sent a letter to Governor Andrew Cuomo and General Electric calling for expanding dredging from the Hudson into the Champlain Canal. Democratic Assemblywoman Kerry Warner represents portions of Saratoga and Washington counties, including Fort Edward, and signed on to the July letter.
I think that the task of cleaning up the section of the Hudson River from the southern end of the Champlain Canal north to Fort Edward and Hudson Falls is not fully done. And we need to, while the facilities are still in place, we We need GE to finish the job.
At the same time, Queensbury Assemblyman Dan Steck, the ranking Republican on the Assembly's Environmental Conservation Committee, told WAMC if dredging equipment is removed, it would be hard to get it back.
Mobilization of the effort is a big part of the expense. So, you know, once the equipment is packed up and leaves, that's a big deal to ever, you know, say, hey, you know, we wish that we had done this 10 years ago. Let's try to get it back here. So, the appropriate time to say, are we sure that we're satisfied? Are we sure that we're done and in a good place for the community, is to do it now.
To that argument, Mayor Traver says he believes work could still continue, even if the Fort Edward processing facility was shut down.
What I do know is there's been PCBs that have been removed from different materials before on a much smaller scale. So I think if, you know, the lion's share of these PCBs have been removed, that some of these areas, the levels of PCBs may be much lower than areas that were dredged. Removal of that material could be processed perhaps on site or closer to where they're taking it out. So, you know, you may not be talking as large a facility as what we have right here right now.
EPA Regional Administrator Judith Enck has said she would support additional dredging if General Electric could reach an agreement with the Hudson River Natural Resource Trustees, including members of the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that are conducting a natural resources damages assessment on the Hudson. GE has maintained that it has fulfilled all of its duties and will have eliminated all of the PCB hotspots targeted by EPA. The EPA will take comments on the plan to decommission and decontaminate the Fort Edward processing facility until September 26th. For more information and a link to the report, visit WAMC.org. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
The Adirondack Council has released its annual report assessing actions by governmental leaders and agencies toward the Adirondack Park. We get more now from the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley.
The 2015 State of the Park report looks at actions affecting the 6-million-acre park taken by Governor Andrew Cuomo, the state legislature, the courts, and the attorney general, local governments, the DEC, the APA, and federal and state agencies. For each issue, a thumbs up or down is assigned. For example, Governor Cuomo received thumbs up for crafting a pro-Adirondack budget and fighting invasive species. But there were thumbs down for raiding regional greenhouse gas initiative funds and lack of leadership towards the Adirondack Park Agency. The council says the park is poised for change, according to spokesman John Sheehan.
When these reports first started, the park was in many ways a very different place. In a lot of ways, we've improved our ability to protect the park. We've improved the habitat and given some species a real fighting chance to come back. But there's still a lot of work to be done. And I think that in the years ahead, as we try to control climate change, try to control pollution, both from the air and in the water, that we can expect the Adirondack Park to continue to improve. But it's really going to take a commitment of money and political will from the governor and from the state legislature.
While David Gibson, a partner with Adirondack Wild, Friends of the Forest Preserve, hasn't dived into the council's report, his group earlier this summer issued a similar report, the Adirondack Park at a crossroad.
We need to have a resurgence of state concern and advocacy for the park right now. The state of New York is compromising their standards in protection of natural resources and the wilderness and open space of the park, all of which are at the basis for the park's economy. So that's very worrying. This is a pattern of state agencies compromising their high standards, and those standards are contained in the statutes and in the laws and policies of their predecessors. So this is very concerning, and we are paying very close attention to the way the state is carrying out its mission in the park.
Local governments within the Blue Line received mixed reviews from the Adirondack Council. They were praised for questioning oil trains traversing the area and working with stakeholders on common ground issues. But towns were panned for advocating for snowmobile and ATV trails. Adirondack Park Local Government Review Board Executive Director Fred Monroe agrees with the environmental groups that the park is at a crossroad.
There's an excellent opportunity to improve conditions here by amendments to the state land master plan, which you know, were really envisioned when it was created in 1972, and it just hasn't happened. You know, the time is right to do that. It has the potential to really increase the accessibility for many New Yorkers who are paying the bills and to improve the economy of the region. The review board did a white paper several months ago on proposed changes to the state land master plan, and many of us in local government think that's a great opportunity to improve conditions here.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A new study shows people exited New York in droves in 2013. And while there is disagreement as to why they left, Dave Lucas has more on another report that finds taxes could be playing a significant role.
For tax reform, the conservative group headed by anti-tax crusader Grover Norquist used IRS data to publish a paper that says about 115,000 New Yorkers left the state in 2013. Matthew Lassner, associate professor of urban studies at Hunter College, theorizes about the exodus.
States like New York, including older northern and eastern cities, is a long-term trend. And if we see a recent uptick, it's probably because we saw a dip during the Great Recession.
Lassner believes tax policy and business unfriendly policies likely play a smaller role in people's deciding to move south and west out of New York than one might be led to think, that businesses moving lead the way for relocations.
And it's a trend that goes back even 100 years. Many Americans sort of stop moving altogether during the Great Recession, and this tends to happen whenever we see an economic downturn. And then when the economy picks back up, people start moving again.
Millions of Americans annually move from state to state for various reasons, including seeking tax relief. Kiplinger has launched a 2015 tax map that shows New York holding down the number 5 position on its list of 10 least tax-friendly states. Sandra Block is senior associate editor at Kiplinger's personal finance magazine.
Start with the state's income tax. It kicks in really early. A 4% income tax kicks in for a married couple at $16,450, which is a pretty low threshold for people to start paying 4% on their income. And then for higher income people, it goes up to 8.8% for people who make more than $1 million. That's a lot of money. New York has one of the highest gas taxes in the country. It's 46 cents a gallon. And your property taxes are among the highest in the U.S. The other issue is, even though the state sales tax is relatively low at 4%, local jurisdictions tack a lot onto that. The average combined state-local sales tax rate is 8.5%. That's the seventh highest in the country.
Connecticut and New Jersey rank second and third, respectively, on Kiplinger's list. Rhode Island, Vermont, and Maine come in at numbers 6, 7, and 8. Lassner weighs in.
Clearly, there's a long-term shift in population in the U.S. to the south and to the west, away from major cities. I think it's a little bit more worrisome for upstate New York than it is for downstate, but I imagine most of the population is leaving from downstate.
But proving Northeasterners don't have to move thousands of miles to escape taxes, Delaware tops the list of 10 most friendly tax states.
What makes Delaware stand out, and it has topped our list several years in a row, is that Delaware is a haven for corporate headquarters. And I think the state makes so much money off of the corporations that have their headquarters there, which is related to the friendly way that Delaware treats them, that it's able to offer very low income taxes for residents.
Links to the reports are up at WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1539. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at the same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.